The Evolve Network is now live at evolvenetwork.tv. Subscribe for meal plans, recipes, cooking shows, and our very own The Magic Pill and The Magic Plant, as well as access to my favourite documentaries. The Evolve Network is also home to our full library of podcasts, with new release podcasts airing first and in full on the channel. You can also watch selected vodcasts in a video format. Meanwhile, enjoy this highlight of our podcast and head over to evolvenetwork.tv for the full Evolve podcast experience. The Evolve with Pete Evans podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. I love exploring the topics that are not traditionally taught at school and take a deep dive into them with my special guests. I invite you to sit back and come along for the ride with an open mind and heart, and please share with your family and friends, as these podcasts may just be the seed from which many things will flourish from. Cheers. The Evolve with Pete Evans podcast is a conversation about my favourite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. I love exploring the topics that are not traditionally taught at school and take a deep dive into them with my special guests. I invite you to sit back and come along for the ride with an open mind and heart, and please share with your family and friends, as these podcasts may just be the seed from which many things will flourish from. Cheers. We've been using Waters Co. water filters for the last 10 years, and I wholeheartedly trust my family's health with them. Waters Co., established 1977, have personal and domestic water filters, which turns your ordinary tap water into great-tasting, alkaline, ionized mineral water, which removes up to 99.9% of fluoride, heavy metals, chemicals, and bacteria, so you can love your tap water again. The Bio 1000 is the latest edition of the BMP 1000 model and the culmination of over 40 years of experience and research into water filtration by some of the world's leading scientists. Waters Co. was first to market with natural gravity-fed systems, creating alkaline water way back in 1984, and have continued to lead the market in research and development, setting the benchmark for all other brands to follow. Please go to my webpage, peteevans.com, to learn more and to receive your special discount from my link on the products page. You're going to love it. Darren, thank you so much for joining us on the chat. How are you, brother?
Good, thank you, Pete. How are you today?
Good, thank you. I think a lot of people would be fascinated with what you're going to share with us today, and hopefully this is the first journey of many, because I'd like to do a series of chats with you. And you are looking a little dark there, so I might even turn up my screen color there. There we go. I think it's the sun in the background. It's not because you're hiding, is it? Right?
No, there's finally the sun's broken through down in overcast Melbourne. So yes, we're experiencing a bit of a cold snap at the moment.
So what I wanted to discuss with you today is the Constitution. And we don't have to go too far today, because I feel like we can create some bite-sized chunks as we go along over the next year, where you start to help inform and empower and educate people with the information that you've got to share. So you have a website called Constitution Watch.
Correct. And the website's got pretty much a lot of the information that we're going to be discussing, plus a lot of other subject matters in respect of legal subjects, anything from the Constitution right through to the state constitutions, and just basically any sort of legal news to what's going on with police. It's a source of information, an alternate source of information that you don't get to see in your local newspaper or on TV.
So let's take us back to the start of Constitution Watch, and what was the catalyst or precursor for you to create a website, and what was your intention when you did create this?
Okay, so the initial reason for creating the website was I've been doing a lot of research for a fair amount of years with a good friend of mine in Western Australia, and we've been discovering certain things along the way in regards to the Commonwealth government and what is actually valid as opposed to invalid, and what is being done beyond the power of the Commonwealth Parliament, or as they're now known, the Australian Parliament. And so we started to make inquiries with certain officers, certain departments of the government, and we're doing this through a mechanism called the Freedom of Information Act. So what would happen is we do some research and we'd see an indiscrepancy in the law. And so we'd write to the particular department and we'd ask them for a confirmation or a denial of whatever we were researching so as to establish whether our research was correct or not. So that was the main catalyst for the website, because what we found was when we uncovered certain things that didn't appear to be lawful, what we noticed in the Freedom of Information Act was that when you do a Freedom of Information request, the responses are meant to be published by each department. And what we found is when you asked a question that exposed something that was perhaps not followed correctly by the letter of the law, then those certain requests or responses, should I say, they never ended up being published by the department in question, and they have an obligation to publish them. And so I began the website to actually put the Freedom of Information responses up on there, and it's just branched out to so many more other areas. So that, in a nutshell, is what the catalyst for the website was, so as to show this information that appears to not be very complimentary towards the actions of the government. And one beautiful thing in the Freedom of Information Act is that it provides a mechanism for you to scrutinise the government's activities. So they actually encourage you to do this. And what we found is when we started to scrutinise and question the activities of the government, they weren't very happy about it. And it appears that they didn't really act within the harmony or the object of that act to provide government information to you, because essentially, if you break it down, what government is and what the parliament is you are the parliament, we are the parliament, we're all the parliament. And the people in parliament are just our representatives. Okay, so they are your voice. So when you look at the parliament, because a lot of people look at government and they say, oh, the government just does all these things and we just have to follow it and there's nothing we can do. And that's not how a democratic society operates. But what we've noticed over the last X amount of years is that that's exactly what's happening. The government are basically dictating to us. And that's in conflict with the very basic fundamental foundation of what democracy is. And democracy is government by the people. And so when you notice these indiscrepancies in the law and in government function and their activities, and you question them, they get a little bit bewildered. And we've even noticed that sometimes once our requests are actually answered and we expose something to these particular people who work within the department, some of them actually leave the department. So I think their integrity is compromised. And you'll find that there are a lot of people that work in government that have high integrity, and they'll go and work somewhere else, because once the facade has been exposed, I do believe those people with high integrity move on. But, of course, there are the ones that remain and the new people that come in. And they seem to work off a thing that's called general acceptance. And that's something we've actually written to the government about as well, because sometimes it doesn't matter, according to the departments, what the law says. It's what they've generally accepted to be, even though it's in conflict with the law and what the foundation law, the Constitution, provides as a limitation for the government to work within, because that's essentially what the Constitution is. It's a limitation on tyrannical government. It stops the government from getting beyond what is prescribed and what is allowed and the powers that it must work within. And just a basic foundation of the Constitution, one of the sections is Section 51. And in Section 51, there's 39 lawmaking powers. And they're the concurrent powers of the states and the Commonwealth. So what that means is both the Commonwealth and the states can exercise them, unless there's exclusive powers for the Commonwealth, and they're found in Section 52. And there's a couple other places around the Constitution where you'll see in some of the sections it says, until the Parliament otherwise prescribes. And that's an action for the Parliament to write a law that's different to what's in that section of the Constitution. But fundamentally, there's 39 lawmaking powers, and it's a restraint. And why they've only got 39 lawmaking powers is, before the Constitution was written, there was the colonies, the colony of New South Wales, Victoria, Queensland, et cetera, et cetera. And those colonies were actually they were actually operating outside of the law a lot of the time in respect of collecting taxes by going over the colonial borders and basically imposing different levels of laws from one state to the next. So they wanted some sort of uniformity. And so they decided to unite under one federal Commonwealth. So what the Constitution brought to them was a group of colonies that were federating together to become a group of states. And now what they did is they gave up some of their powers, and the Commonwealth took those powers over so that the states could function on a uniform basis, where there wasn't any inconsistency of laws between the states. And that's one of the fundamental laws of the Constitution, which is Section 109, that if a law of the state is inconsistent with a law of the Commonwealth, the state law is invalid to the point of that inconsistency. So it's basically an agreement to keep the states in check, and also a limitation on the Commonwealth so as not to exceed the powers that the states retained after federation.
So when was this created?
It was written in 1900, and it came into being on the 1st of January 1901. And there was, prior to that, for around about 10 years, there were constitutional conventions in each state where they developed all the different sections of the Constitution, and every state had input on that, and everyone had to agree in harmony about all of those sections. So it was basically a book of rules decided by the states where they were going to put an ultimate power above them, the Commonwealth, and they were going to operate uniformly between the states. And there was an overseeing power in respect of if any of their laws were inconsistent with any of the Commonwealth laws. So basically the Commonwealth laws apply to everyone in Australia. And, you know, you're in New South Wales, laws of New South Wales apply to you and everyone in New South Wales, but they don't apply to me. So, but the Commonwealth laws, and there's a part in the Constitution that's a very important part called Clause 5. And it says that the Constitution and all the laws made by the Parliament are binding on all the courts, judges, and people of every state, no matter what the state laws say. So that's one, that's another particular part of the Constitution that that you can rely on for certain things like taxes going across certain borders, that they're not they don't discriminate between states, and that subjects of each state cannot be discriminated against.
So how long have you been looking into this for? And what was it for you that made you curious about this? Or has this always been a, I don't want to use the word hobby, but an interest for you? Tell me about how you discovered it and why it was so important to you.
Well, I started going to some public meetings in Melbourne, a law group, and they brought these things to my attention, that there were certain things happening in Australia now that were actually outside of what the Constitution allowed. And there's a couple of parts in the Constitution that say these magic words, and they say subject to this Constitution. So there's a part that talks about the state's constitution, and it says that the state's constitutions are subject to this Constitution. And also in Section 51, which we discussed earlier about the lawmaking powers, it says in there that they have the power to make laws on those 39 subject matters, but subject to the Constitution. So, for example, I'll give you a little example that popped up recently. There's a part in the Privacy Act. It's Section 94H, and that says that you cannot be forced to download the COVID app, for example. And it says that if you don't download the COVID app, you can't be refused service at a business. And then a couple of sections later on, what they've done is they've written this law which says that the states can write laws inconsistent with this. Well, that's in conflict with Section 109, where a law of the state cannot be inconsistent with the law of the Commonwealth. And the Commonwealth does not have the power to legislate in conflict with that, make laws in conflict with it, because Section 51, where the lawmaking powers are, say that it's subject to the Constitution and therefore subject to Section 109, where there cannot be an inconsistent law. So there's an example of a law where the Parliament has gone beyond its scope of powers to write a particular law and to grant something that allows the states to rise above the Constitution and write laws inconsistent with it. And these are the sorts of things that we've been picking up on. And these are the things that are basically in conflict with your very basic rights. And it appears, I'm not making a claim here, but it appears that there's powers at play here that are interfering with your basic rights. And that's something that really sort of tuned my mind into this and made me want to explore it and see why these things have happened and why they're happening. Because if the Constitution is this limitation on powers and there's certain parameters that they must work within and they're not working within them, what allows for that to happen? And there's a court, everyone's heard of the High Court. And the High Court actually are the, I suppose, the interpreters of the Constitution. So if you have a problem with an interpretation in the Constitution, or you think a part of the Constitution's been something's in conflict with it, you can go to the High Court and get a decision on this. And it appears that there's all these things in place within the state to stop you doing this? All these little tribunals and things that you can go to that you're pushed towards to actually get these particular tribunals to make these decisions for you. And the thing is, when you go to a tribunal is not a court, so they don't actually have any judicial power. So it's not actually binding on you. And if it's, say, a question in regards to the Constitution, this particular tribunal, because they have no judicial power, they can't make any decisions on the Constitution, so they ignore it. And usually these things are by the consent of both parties. So it's like when you're fighting with your sister when you're a child and you go to mum and dad and you get them to work it out. It's with both of your consent that you're going to agree to whatever the parents decide. And it's the same thing when you go to a tribunal. You both consent to going there and you both agree that whatever the outcome is, we'll abide by that. So, and these things appear, I'm not saying they have been, but it appears that they actually stop you from getting to the High Court and having these certain things decided. And a lot of these things are going on at the moment, especially in regards to the things that everybody's seeing out in the community that have been happening for the last 12 to 18 months. In respect of basic fundamental rights being encroached upon, in all under the guise of safety. Allegedly, we're in a pandemic. Now, you know, I'm not sure about you, Pete, but if I have to go and get a test to see if I'm sick, I don't think there's anything to worry about. You know, just think about back in the days when there was the plague, for example. People were bringing out their dead in hordes. People knew there was a pandemic on and you didn't have to go and get tested for it. But, you know, so there appears to be like a bending of the truth, so to speak, a bending of the boundaries of reality. And it's all based on the guise of safety. And I suppose that would get to one of the subjects that you want to discuss that we spoke about earlier in respect of medical services.
Well, before we go there, I want to go back to why you started Constitution Watch. And in a perfect world, what would be your intention for each individual in Australia to understand about their rights, and where do they find out what their rights are?
Well, yes, I agree. There's on Constitution Watch, what we've tried to do is we've got a plethora of pages there that people can look at that actually show them their rights in respect of certain areas of law, because law is so vast in its application. You know, you can go from family law to constitutional law to, you know, traffic law and everything in between. There's a law for everything. You know, it's almost illegal to walk outside your front door these days. So, you know, just in a lot of people often come to us with, you know, very basic inquiries. Like, for example, in Victoria, a lot of people are having problems with law enforcement encroaching on just the right to walk around, and they're basically trying to engage you so as to find out something that's incorrect or something that's wrong that you've done and issue you a fine. And most people aren't aware that if you haven't broken a law, then you're under no obligation to speak to police. And, you know, this has happened to a multitude of people where the police will come up to you and start talking, and all of a sudden they're either putting handcuffs on you or they're issuing you a fine, and you haven't actually done anything. And a lot of the time police are using the information that you give them, and they're coming up with some sort of conclusion that you've done something wrong. These particular engagements, you know, you don't have to engage in. You know, if you haven't committed a crime, and I suggest anyone that has the police coming up to them and engaging with them, no matter what they say, and if you know you haven't committed a crime, I'd say the answer is, when they engage you or say hello or anything, say, "Sorry, have I committed a crime?" Now, usually this shows them that you know that you only have to engage with them if you've committed a crime or if they suspect you of committing a crime. But if they suspect you of committing a crime, they have to justify that suspicion to your understanding. So they have to show you what crime you've allegedly committed. And then they actually have the right to engage with you. But you'll find that a lot of the time, you know, you're walking into a sporting venue, you know, and police are there on duty. And a lot of the time they're just taking names so that they can justify to their superior officer what they've been doing at that particular sporting event. And they're collecting names just in case something happens, and then perhaps it was you, and then perhaps they can contact you and make the accusation, and maybe you could say something, and all of a sudden now you're a suspect, whether you are or not. So it's quite interesting, this engagement with police. And it's, I remember when I was very young and I used to go to the city a lot, we just go to music shops, and a lot of the time the police would ask us for our details and say, "Oh, we just have to justify to the sergeant why what we've been doing." And we'd give them, and we didn't know that we didn't have to give them. And then later on I realised and I learnt that through a little bit of case law, Victorian case law, that there's certain people have been tested on this, and the courts have spoken, the Supreme Court and the Magistrates Court have spoken in respect of whether you have to actually engage with police. And if you haven't committed a crime, you do not have to speak with them. But most people are unaware of these basic fundamental rights. And we've got some pages on the website that cover all the legislation and what you need to say.
But you're not a lawyer, are you?
Well, that's a good question.
It is a good question.
Because if you actually look up the meaning of lawyer, a lawyer is one who studies the law, and I study the law every day. And the meaning goes a little bit further, and it says, especially a barrister or a solicitor, but not exclusively. So to answer your question correctly, yes, I am a lawyer, but no, I'm not a barrister or solicitor.
So what I'm coming to understand about talking and listening to you, Darren, is that, sorry, Shakova, my dog is coming to say g'day. She wants to be on the podcast. Is that it's a lot of it has to do with the language, because I've noticed that you're very careful with the words.
100%. That's one thing that we've realized over the years, is that there's a word game going on in respect of when you engage with government and when you engage with police. And there's certain trigger words that will engage them and certain words that won't engage them. So unfortunately, if you don't know this government code of words, you can get yourself into trouble. And, you know, there's many words that describe many things, and if you use the incorrect description, you can find yourself in a bad position. So, you know, for example, in respect of, you know, certain classifications, if you use certain words, then sometimes the authorities will come and issue a fine. If you use alternate words that aren't their trigger words, you'll find that those sorts of things won't happen. And there's many situations, you know, that cover this, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners are probably shaking their head now saying, I understand what he's saying right there. Because, yeah, it's all relevant to the language you use. And that's another thing with police.
I really hope you enjoyed the first half of this podcast. If you'd like to listen to the rest, please visit evolvenetwork.tv. That's evolvenetwork.tv. We'll see you there.
The information, views and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.